Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. On this week's show, we begin with an exclusive in-depth interview with Rachel Billow, head of the New Orleans Food Truck Coalition, and Councilwoman Stacy Head. They share the story behind a groundbreaking food truck ordinance and how it will affect New Orleans. Then, Chef Greg Reggio of Semolina and Zia Restaurants reveals how he creates successful restaurant concepts and gives us the scoop on what's coming next for his culinary development company, The Taste Buds. So whether your next meal comes from a food truck or a traditional bricks and mortar establishment, we've got a taste of it all for you on this week's Louisiana Eats. Earlier this year, Rachel Billow, head of the New Orleans Food Truck Coalition, joined forces with Councilwoman-at-Large Stacy Head in an effort to reform the city's outdated food truck laws. The law currently in place was created in the 1950s, largely to regulate fruit and vegetable truck vendors and the like, but at the time, no one could have possibly foreseen the burgeoning food truck movement of the 21st century. This much-needed change to our local laws has not come easily, and in fact, today still hangs in the balance. Stacy and Rachel, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Let's go back to the start of this process.
We knew that there were going to be some obstacles to passing food truck legislation. As odd as it sounds, New Orleans is a difficult city to change anything in. Even though we're a rich city with culture, all manner of interesting personalities, talents, interests, it's a city where any kind of change is very, very difficult to accomplish. So we had a roundtable discussion. It was fairly well attended. Some micro-entrepreneurship foundations that support, such as Good Works Network, that support small businesses such as food trucks, because it's a fairly inexpensive business when you think about opening a restaurant compared to a brick-and-mortar restaurant to start. So Good Works Network was actually the host of that meeting, and we had the beginning discussion of what does a good set of laws look like for food truck operation. And just to let everyone know, the status quo, what we have right now is, as you said, a series of outdated rules that were drafted in the 1950s. The limitations right now, food truck operators cannot be in one location for more than 45 minutes. Well, that's unworkable with their business. They couldn't move every 45 minutes. You can't do that.
You can barely get set up and operating.
Of course. There is a 600-foot distance from a restaurant prohibition, which is clear protectionism and inappropriate, not done for the health and welfare of the citizens, which is appropriate legislation, but instead done to just protect one group of businesses over another. The final thing that's a problem with the law is that we only have 100 permits for any type of mobile food vendors. So that's the shrimp man, that's
the fruit and vegetable guy,
fruit and vegetables, that's the gelato cart, and that's also the food truck industry.
So, and the lucky dogs.
I think they may be outside of that 100.
Okay.
Are they?
I was under the impression that they would have, for each vendor, they would each have a permit. But apparently, one of those 100, I'm told, is for Lucky Dogs.
And that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's everything for Lucky Dogs is different.
So. So you all began to work on what this new law might look like. And in the interim, while the ordinance was being developed, Rachel, tell us about the loopholes in the current law that somehow allowed organizations like My House NOLA to help you all out and get you happening on the street.
Sure. Well, I mean, essentially, the special event permit allows us to operate outside of those typical regulations. So Barry Schwartz from my house, basically what we've been doing is we've been getting these special event permits that allow us to operate in the CBD and to operate for, you know, several hours at a time, all congregated together. And so that's allowed us to have some of the, you know, we've been doing monthly Central City festivals as well as other neighborhoods around the city. Barry's in the process of doing a two-month-long series called Rolling Through that's featuring some different neighborhoods in the city, the Bywater, Broadmoor, Central City, and Treme.
Yeah,
it's a great event.
Describe for me the collaborative process that actually brought about that initial ordinance that was finally successfully voted in at the city council meeting on April 18th.
We had a series of small group meetings with various members of the Food Truck Coalition, food truck operators who weren't within the Food Truck Coalition, neighborhood leaders, department heads, and the executive branch for traffic to city planning. Because in addition to trying to change the rules that regulate the permitting of food trucks, we want to, in the new CZO, the new Comprehensive Zoning Ordinance, we want semi-permanent food truck operation. For example, in areas where you have food deserts and you have some vacant lots, mm-hmm. I think there's a great opportunity for food trucks to operate on a semi-permanent basis in those areas. Mm-hmm. And then it could grow into something like in other cities where they have the commissary kitchen nearby, they have bathrooms available nearby, they've got tables set up so that it would become almost like a much better than a regular food truck, outdoor food truck. And New Orleans, with weather that's good most of the year, I think that's a great opportunity. So, and then the first ordinance I introduced in February, the first one I think came out, I believe February 21st, and it was more supportive of, I think, the Food Truck Coalition's positions and sort of what they wanted to see as the ultimate result than was going to be supported or at least not objected to vehemently by the Louisiana Restaurant Association, some of the neighborhoods, and some of my colleagues. So in order to try to come up with a solution that everybody could live with and we would get passed, I withdrew that ordinance. We had another series of public meetings, sent out outlines to everybody who had ever sent an email about food trucks and who was interested in food trucks, outlining what our new ordinance would say. And it did have some greater restrictions on food truck operations. And we also worked with the DHH because there was some voice concerns by certain members of the council and the Louisiana Restaurant Association. And the LRA really stepped up to the plate and provided us letters that they are, in fact, regulating food trucks just like they regulate restaurants.
That's wonderful.
And they're going to actually add some spot checks for food trucks just like they do to restaurants in the coming year, which the good food truck operators welcome because they run a great shop.
Exactly. So that was then basically the bones of the ordinance. All of a sudden, there were some unexpected amendments that started to happen, right?
Well, the day before, and I do, they say making legislation is like making sausage. You don't want to watch it. And this was the perfect example. There were, I believe, two additions. One was a 300-foot prohibition, and the other was a bathroom requirement.
Bathroom requirement's pretty hard. It's not like the food truck can add a trailer with a portalette.
I think
I wouldn't
want
to go to a food truck.
I don't want to do that either. No.
I think it's ridiculous. I hope that my point was made by the why can't we have an alternative of either you can have access to a bathroom or wear a Depends.
Oh.
Just choose.
Daisy.
And I hope that sort of made my position crystal
That's
clear.
Pretty clear. Okay, so really everybody was sick of waiting. Is that why everybody agreed to then go ahead and vote on that ordinance?
It certainly was not the product that I would have liked. It was more restrictive on food trucks than I think was appropriate for a variety of reasons. It was not as restrictive as some of my colleagues would have liked. It certainly was not as helpful to the Food Truck Coalition as they would have liked, and it probably is not nearly as restrictive as the Louisiana Restaurant Association would have liked. But it was something that nobody was terribly happy with, but nobody was terribly unhappy with.
And yet it passed with only one dissenting vote. But then the mayor vetoes it. How did it make you all feel?
I was surprised.
Yeah, I think I was shocked more than anything else. I didn't have enough information to understand what the situation was and whether he was vetoing it for reasons that I would be happy with, which it turns out to be the case, or whether he didn't want there to be any changes. And so I wasn't sure what to think initially.
Well, and it was so funny because the city council voted it once and they can just vote to override him. But in fact, you were thinking strategically about all this. And so how did it go instead, Stacey?
Because of the practical difficulties of a veto override, it probably would not have happened. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want to put that back up and have an absolute failure. So we waited to see if we could get some articulated positions by the administration to see really what's the issue. Are they things we can live with? And without the knowledge, we couldn't make a decision. So I waited until I heard from the administration what the issues were, and I got that answer today.
After a short break, Councilwoman Stacey Head and Food Truck Coalition's Rachel Billow reveal what comes next in the process of creating a new New Orleans food truck ordinance. You don't want to miss this. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. After the New Orleans City Council successfully passed a new food truck ordinance on April 18th, Mayor Mitch Landrieu vetoed the new law. Our in-depth conversation with Councilwoman Stacey Head and Food Truck Coalition leader Rachel Billow continues as they explain the reasons for the veto and the mayor's plan for the next steps in the evolving New Orleans food truck scene. Well, as I understand it, you know, it was like all quiet on the Western Front, and then suddenly Rachel alone was called into a meeting on May 8th, right?
Yeah, I received a text the day before indicating that I could come in with our attorney, Andrew Legrand, and meet with members of the mayor's administration to discuss the issues that they had with the ordinance. So
what did the mayor come up with?
He has committed through his staff that he wants a removal of the proximity restriction. Apparently he wants a complete removal, a removal of the bathroom requirement, which I think is a great thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that
should be regulated by the health department, which is their take on it. And so essentially, you know, because we have appropriate hand washing stations, you know, we're required to have a separate hand washing sink in addition to our three compartment sink for dishwashing.
And this is what we've been arguing all along about the bathroom requirement, that it really is superfluous and it's taking the regulation that's done by the state and trying to bring it within City Hall. And frankly, we can't regulate the stuff that's our job anyway. Let's let the DHH be in charge of whether or not
Absolutely.
Rachel's food truck is healthy and safe. So that's another good one. And assuring that in residential parking zones, the two-hour limit is adhered to. Mm-hmm. And that I don't have any problem with that. If you have a two-hour residential parking zone, it was done for a reason, and therefore food truck operators ought to adhere to that.
Yeah. And so the mayor is doing a feasibility study, or he's meeting with the city council?
They're working on creating a draft. They'll spend the next couple of weeks doing that. They're also, in the meantime, they're meeting with council members to begin the discussions of, essentially, a lot of these changes are things that Stacey had wanted to include in the original proposal, but didn't based on necessary compromises. So it's going to require some discussions with the council members from the mayor's administration explaining this is why these changes are necessary as advised to us by our, you know, legal counsel and the city attorney.
And so what's the timeline on this?
Well, that's the negative part. Yes, I believe that what we provided to the council and as ultimately passed by the council was a very good product. Mm-hmm. Could it have been improved upon by engagement earlier on? Yes, especially since we agree on the fundamentals, and I really would have liked some help to get my colleagues to agree that no bathroom requirement is needed. But administration really wants to put their sort of stamp of approval and put that law together on their own letterhead, and that's great. They added one more thing that I think is pretty great, is a permit system that allows a licensed food truck operator to get an additional franchise fee. And that's basically a lease of public land for areas that are otherwise prohibited.
Like?
Such as the
French
downtown.
French Quarter?
Not the French Quarter. Not the French Quarter. It's for the health and welfare of the French Quarter. It's too difficult to be able to operate mobile food vendors. It just won't work.
Right.
But in the downtown area, for example, we had an outright prohibition. Well, the administration has said, let's amend that and let's add an allowance in certain circumstances when you get a franchise fee. So let's say a gallery operator, and we've had many gallery operators downtown who say they want to have food trucks as part of their openings, and they would love to have wine inside and food trucks outside. The food truck operators can get a franchise agreement that allows them to go in an otherwise prohibited area, and it's done on a case-by-case basis, allowing the administration and, to some extent, the district council member to decide whether or not it's an appropriate location to go outside the normal rule. So I think that's a great addition. And
it
again,
is.
It's something that I think is going to make the whole package better.
We have so many festivals. Once the new laws are enacted, will we see any changes regarding those events?
There aren't going to be any legislative changes with regard to proximity from those festivals. You know, for both the parade during Mardi Gras and Jazz Fest, you have to be a couple blocks from those festivities. But I think what we're going to start to see is a lot more trucks that are operating at the late night bars and kind of all around town, so that everyone who's coming in town for these events are going to start to see our growing food truck scene.
Then the other events, like White Linen Night or some of the other art events that we have along Magazine Street, I think are going to be enriched greatly by the allowance of food trucks. I know that I have gone to many of the weekend openings with my family, and the restaurants on Magazine are absolutely packed. And when you have two kids that want to eat, you can't wait an hour and a half. I love, went to Rum House the other day, hour and 15 minutes. We walked across the street, hour and 10 minutes. So we couldn't get into any restaurants. We sure would have loved to be able to go to one of the fabulous food truck vendors and have a family dinner there, because instead we just went home and had frozen peas and macaroni and cheese.
Well, that's kind of sad.
It was quite sad.
Well, I know that a mayor cannot introduce an ordinance. That has to be done by a city council member. So are you planning on introducing this new ordinance?
I told them I would be delighted if, again, what they have provided to me and what we've confirmed in writing is what they plan on putting forward. Again, it's great. It is going to be delayed, unnecessarily, maybe. But the product is going to be a great one, and it's going to make the city a better place and a more fun place and more accepting of a new industry that has not been embraced. And hopefully in 6 to 9 months, we're all looking back on this saying, gosh, what a miserable process. And maybe it took us a year and a half, but we are here with a progressive set of rules that allows a really cool industry to thrive and makes our neighborhoods better.
The hope is to have an ordinance to introduce at a council meeting in June. And so the vote would be in mid-July. And so by the time everything was ready to go, they said that September would be optimistic, but October would hopefully be realistic. So
by the time the college students start rolling back into town, hopefully we'll have a fresh, exciting new food scene. And wouldn't it be thrilling if, instead of lagging last, New Orleans became the leader in legislation that works for this industry?
Well, that's the cool thing, in my opinion. I mean, I'm really happy with the way that the process has gone in terms of like the collaboration that we've seen with all these different groups that we've discussed, and now incorporating the mayor's office as well. And so I think that we sort of set this model of we're now the progressive city when it comes to creating food truck-friendly laws.
Small businesses. I mean, these are small businesses.
Yes.
And we don't want to make it difficult to open up a small business in the city of New Orleans.
It's an economic incubator. Mm-hmm. And truly, I'm also so happy to hear that even you're getting the collaborative help from the Louisiana Restaurant Association. That's really wonderful, too. So as this all rolls out, would you please come back and keep us informed as to the changes with this very important element of the New Orleans food scene?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
okay.
We hope to have some very good news for you soon.
Well, the door is always open at Louisiana Eats for my food truck friends. So please come back soon.
Well, that sounds great. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilwoman at Large Stacy Head and head of the New Orleans Food Truck Coalition, Rachel Billow. Founding editor of Louisiana Kitchen and Culture magazine, Jill Benson, is an investigative reporter who can hunt out Louisiana's best foods at their very source. So, Jill, welcome back and tell me, what's on our plate today?
Poppy, we're going to be enjoying goat cheese from Belle Ecorse Farms in St. Martinville. This beautiful farm, it's a lush 10-acre micro-dairy farm and goat cheese plant. And it's located on land that cheesemaker Wanda Barrows inherited from her paternal grandfather, who was a direct descendant of the French Acadians who came from Nova Scotia. But Wanda started out in 2003 with two goats. She now has 130 goats, not including the babies. And they're a small, happy herd. And Wanda, they have plenty of company. Wanda also breeds miniature horses and exotic parrots, and she has a generally cheerful cast of dogs, cats, chickens, and other critters roaming around.
That must be quite a zoo to visit.
It's quite the place to visit, and she's also a prolific gardener. Her gardens are beautiful. It's a full sensory experience to go there.
So tell me about her cheese.
Her cheeses are all handmade. They are very much in demand by chefs all over the state. Chefs at Jolie, Poor, Village Cafe, and Charlie G's in Lafayette have this on the menu, as does Clementine's in New Iberia. And Emeril and John Besh just can't get enough of it for their restaurants either.
Well, that speaks a mouthful.
It does. And all of her cheeses, as she says, they're lovingly handmade using her goat milk. And I'm thinking it must have something to do with the classical music she plays while she milks her goats.
that'll make for some happy goats.
They're very frisky and loving. A visit there will bring you close to the goats. She makes fresh Chevers, goat milk feta, and some soft ripened bloomy rind cheeses. And she works seasonally. Typically, the aged bloomy rinds and feta style cheeses are available from spring through the end of October. And the seasoned Chevers, she has both sweet and savory varieties. She sells them in spreads, as discs or logs. She sells those all year long. But my favorite is during peak season, which would be now, you can get delicious Chevers curd. And this looked weird. And Rhonda said, oh, you must try this. So I did. I was hooked. It's divine.
I know that at one time she was selling at farmers markets. Does she still do a farmers market business?
She does. She's at the Baton Rouge Farmers Market almost every Saturday. And her products can also be purchased at the farm store, which is open to the public and for tours by appointment. But she said once you kind of figure out her schedule, you can show up. And then her cheeses are also sold at Joey's Specialty Foods in Lafayette and at the St. James Cheese Company in New Orleans.
Well, that is really great to know. And there's so many delicious things you can cook with goat cheese. It's so applicable to so many things. I'm sure we're all going to rush out and find something to do with Wanda's goat cheese.
Absolutely. In the current issue, the May-June issue of Louisiana Kitchen and Culture magazine, we have a very simple handmade ravioli recipe. It uses wonton wrappers and herbal goat cheese from Wanda.
Okay, well, there's my recipe. I'll be doing it. Thank you so much, Jill.
You're welcome, Poppy. I'm looking forward to coming back and sharing more great Louisiana eats with you.
Please do. Founding editor of Louisiana Kitchen and Culture magazine, Jill Benson, our Louisiana Eats roving reporter.
On the road again. Places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again.
A visit to Bellacourse Farm provides inspiration aplenty for ways to incorporate Juan de Barros' award-winning goat cheeses into your dinner menus. One of Wanda's favorite dishes is a goat cheese ravioli that is amazingly simple to prepare. Start with one of the many pre-made savory goat cheese spreads available at the markets, or use your own fresh herb combination for an aromatic touch. Wanda's secret is to use store-bought wonton wrappers instead of pasta dough. Place a small dollop of the cheese in the center of each wrapper. Then, moisten the edges of the wrappers with water and fold them in half. Seal the triangles by crimping them closed with a fork. When ready to serve, drop 3 or 4 ravioli at a time into salted boiling water. They only need to cook for a minute or two before they float to the top, indicating they're ready to eat. Drizzle a buttery herb sauce on top, and presto, dinner served. You can find this recipe in the May-June issue of Louisiana Kitchen and Culture magazine or by visiting our Louisiana Eats website at wwno.org. I'm Poppy Tooker, and Bellacourse Farms goat cheese is real Louisiana Eats. Classical training and extensive restaurant experience, Chef Ryan Hughes is perfectly suited to be our Louisiana Eats ingredient and technique specialist. Ryan's here with another fascinating cooking tip for us all. Ryan, welcome back to Louisiana Eats.
Poppy, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it.
So what you want to talk about today?
Well, I thought about it for a while. We discussed it before, and I'm like, there's so many different things that we use as chefs that the home cooks really don't know. They see it maybe in the supermarket at a Whole Foods, and they're like, okay, first of all, what is this?
Yeah.
I know it's there, and people are selling it, and you see the chefs in their clogs and their check pants buying it.
So spit it out. What is it?
Well, it was relative to a meal I did not too long ago, and I saw beautiful cardoons in the market.
Now, aren't cardoons just the leaves of an artichoke plant?
And that's interesting. A lot of people think that, and from what I understand, years ago, we're talking 300-400 years ago, the Romans started cultivating them, and they grew wild in the Mediterranean. And what it is, it's in the same family as the thistle family, which is, of course, in the artichoke family. Not a lot of people know that. And the artichoke was the blossom or the fruit of the cardoon. But what had happened, and especially here in New Orleans, was a lot of the immigrants, the Italian, the Sicilian immigrants that came over in the late 1800s, they, of course, brought over their love for all those things, artichokes and leeks and onions and whatnot, and they wanted to bring over cardoons.
And they can be grown here.
They can be grown in Louisiana, that's correct.
And we kind of see them maybe late spring.
In late spring, you'll see them. It's perfect that it shows up right around St. Joseph's Day. So you'll see them a lot in the markets, and it's suited towards people that had them on their menus, you know, that kind of grew up with them.
Okay, so cut to the chase. We get the cardoons home from the store.
You bring them home.
What do we do next?
You look at them. Oh, boy, what do I do with this thing? The most important thing that people have to learn and to know about is how to clean them properly.
Uh-huh.
Any type of vegetable that's in the thistle family, like artichokes, you know, as soon as you start peeling them, you need to put them in acidulated water.
Or they turn nasty brown.
They turn brown, exactly. So you get some ice water, put a squeeze of a lemon in there, half of a lemon. And you take a peeler, good heavy peeler, and you start peeling off those outer layers. You just can't cook them. You peel it down and you start to get off the outer fibers part and you get this nice kind of cucumber-like kind of flesh to it and you see where it starts to get soft. And it's almost like when you get some recipes and you're peeling a large stalk of celery and you get the fibrous parts coming off of there like with a paring knife.
Yeah.
It's the same exact thing.
Okay.
So you peel it off. You've got this long stalk that's maybe about 1.5 feet long.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, as long as you keep it in cold water, you can keep it in cold water overnight. a lot of the Italians, old Italian grandmothers, they would fry them, and they're absolutely amazing. They're delicious. I mean, of course, anything you fry is going to be delicious.
Yeah,
so it's an easy way to go. But they would take them and bread them in egg wash, and they would put a little anchovy in the egg wash, which you gotta love.
Yeah.
And then you would put in fresh breadcrumbs with a little Parmesan cheese, a little Italian seasoning. You could put oregano. They'd
probably fry them in olive oil.
And then they fry them in olive oil, and you cut them into, like the French say, batons, you know, about 2 inches thick, fry them in olive oil, and they put it on the side, and it's absolutely amazing. So you've got this nice crispy outside, and then the inside turns this wonderfully liquid, buttery cucumber texture, but it tastes like cross between an artichoke and a celery stalk at the
same
time.
And I've seen them pureed too, haven't I?
You can puree them. You can braise them. The menu that I did with them, I decided to do something a little bit different, and I used duck stock, and I had some satsumas left over, so I was doing a playoff of duck à l'orange. Yeah, it was great. It was interesting. I put them on a duck dish, and I braised them in the long batons, and they braised perfectly. You can take them. It takes about an hour and a half to start to get them soft. And I took the liquid with the cardoons and reduced it down, and that was actually my sauce. So it was duck à l'orange with cardoons.
And when you're frying them, you're really just frying them until they're brown.
Until they're brown. You'll know exactly. Yep. Just have the oil at the right temperature. And they come out nice and crispy, but it's a completely different texture. That's what's interesting about it, you know?
Okay, you've made me really hungry for cardoons, so I'm going shopping.
Cardoons it is.
I'll see you soon, okay?
Wonderful. Thanks, Poppy.
Thanks, Ryan. Chef Ryan Hughes, our favorite Louisiana Eats consultant. We'll be right back with Chef Greg Reggio, one of the taste buds behind the Semolina and Zia restaurant chains. Wait till you hear what they're planning next. Stay tuned. Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Rouse's Markets. Louisiana Eats culinary heritage heroes are farmers, fishers, chefs, and food producers who bring an authentic taste of our state's heritage to the world's tables. Almost 18 years ago, this week's hero set out to bring Louisiana farmers back to the New Orleans marketplace.
When we discovered or rediscovered the tradition of farmers' markets in the city, this was at a time when the memory of farmers driving into the city, inhabiting street corners and different public markets and selling the fruits of their labor was really becoming a very faded memory.
Our hero reinvented the age-old tradition of food producers delivering their just-picked produce to market shoppers, but his visionary thinking didn't stop with the new market. He worked with Loyola University's Twomey Center for Peace Through Justice to ensure that fresh food access would be available to everyone. In a stroke of brilliance, he researched ways for the market to accept governmental food assistance dollars, thereby creating an alternative money system that uses wooden tokens, which anyone can purchase using EBT or credit cards.
The fact that a farmer's market was established by a wide array of community activists would house it at a Jesuit university and then incubate that project so that it could become a freestanding nonprofit organization, Market Umbrella, that on one hand would be a practitioner that runs the Crescent City Farmers Market, but then that market serves as a hothouse for innovation, for learning, and ultimately to become a public market think tank.
Any culinary entrepreneur was welcomed into the marketplace, and our hero helped shepherd some life-changing new businesses.
The young women who had, you know, very little experience, very little opportunity to get experience, they got out of public housing ahead of schedule, got free market apartments, became homeowners. The business did not survive after Katrina, but they themselves grew to become important leaders who are now employed in the nonprofit sector and are contributing to the public good.
In early 2013, our homegrown hero was chosen as the new executive director of Slow Food USA. Founded in Italy over 25 years ago by Carlo Petrini, the international slow food movement has long championed the cause of the food producer and eater alike. That's why Richard McCarthy, founder of the Crescent City Farmers Market and new executive director of Slow Food USA, is this week's Culinary Heritage Hero, brought to you with support by Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. Congratulations, Richard. We can always count on you to serve edible excellence with a generous side of social justice. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eat. Not be familiar with Louisiana chef Greg Reggio, but it's a very safe bet that at one time or another you have enjoyed his food. Together with Hans Limburg and Gary Darling in 1997, Greg helped found the Taste Buds, an innovative culinary and restaurant development company responsible for creating the popular chains Semolina and Zia Rotisserie and Grill. Joining us to discuss the fascinating world of the taste buds is Chef Greg Reggio. Welcome, Greg.
Well, thanks for having me, Poppy.
How did the taste buds originally come together?
Well, you know, it was kind of a neat thing. We were hired to do a celebrity hunting and fishing trip, of all places, in Hawaii. The setup was this. People paid a lot of money to hang out with movie stars and rock and roll folks and sports heroes at the time, and we were hired to do the food for it. So we had to cook three meals a day on a bare beach. I'm not talking naked. I'm talking bare. There was nothing on it. Had to bring all of our equipment into it, and we cooked three meals a day for the people that were out there. Anything they hunted or they fished, we would cook up right then and there. In fact, I introduced the Hawaiians to the Cajun microwave oven, which works on the same principle as the Kahlua pig, where you dig the pit and the fire's on top. Of course, there was no digging with our pig. And the Hawaiians, by the end of the deal, they were all sketching out how to build their own Cajun microwave oven. So I don't think there's much digging going on there anymore. But that's how it started. And the three of us were there, and it was a great time. And it was at that event, we're sitting there drinking Mai Tais on the beach at sunset one night after this whole thing was pretty much over and done with. I think it was Hans said, man, we ought to do this for a living. And we kind of chuckled and said, you know what? We really should. It's a lot of fun. And we decided to form a consulting company. And we needed a name for it. And it made sense. We were chefs. We were friends. Taste buds.
I love the name. Yeah. I have always loved the name.
Thanks.
So describe the process that you all go through to develop a new concept.
You know, it's one of those things where we're always looking at new and interesting ideas. Sometimes it starts off with just a menu item that may grow into a concept. So with Semolina, you know, we had a pretty clear vision. We wanted to do pasta, and we wanted to do something that was a point of difference. So we said, well, let's take the international twist with it. And that's where, you know, after the research that we did, we found that there's pastas all over the world, whether it's pad thai, whether it's fideos or things like that. And then when you start cross-culturing some things and maybe take an item, let's say like some Indian flavors, cross that with you know, some pasta, and you come up with a pasta paella. So it's got everything but the rice in there. We found some wonderful saffron pastas to use and things like that. With Zia, it was about the time where, you know, we were eating a little bit differently, not nearly as much pasta as we used to eat. And it happened to be right at the start of the old Sugar Busters craze. Not that we were planning on that. It just kind of happened at the same time. And we wanted to do something with the rotisserie. And we just kind of built the menu around those great roasted meats that came off of there. And it was, the timing was great that people were also eating that way. Our newest concept we're working on, you know, right now Latin flavors are really hot. Seems to be those are the places that we go to when we travel out of town. So we decided, hey, let's see what we can do. Let's get a great piece of property. We just recently bought the property where at Metairie Road and I-10, where Semolina used to be.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, the old spot with the crawfish.
I'm so glad to know something's going to happen there again.
If you go look at that spot right now, there's a pile driver, and if they're doing what they're supposed to do, they should have put at least 10 piles in the ground today. So should be September when we open up the new concept, and that's called Cucina Mizzato. And Mizzato is kind of a mix-up two words, the first meaning viewpoint, which is mirador, so it's our viewpoint. The other word is cruzar, or cruzando, and my Spanish isn't that great, and that means to cross. So kind of a cross-culturing, but not outside of Mexican and Latin flavors, within the Latin flavors. So not just Mexican, but Peruvian, some Caribbean, Yucatecan. So it should be a fun concept.
Oh, can you give us a little scoop of some of the dishes that we might find on the menu there?
Of course. One of my favorite dishes that we've been working on is this thing we call Nuevo Barbacoa. Camarones, which is a new style barbecue shrimp.
So
now it's not barbecued like you would say on a grill. It's more along the lines of what we have as New Orleans style barbecue shrimp. But instead of, you know, the lean parens and the butter and some of those flavors that are in there, we've incorporated some of the ancho chilies and some toasted garlic and some other flavors in there. So it's very similar to the emulsified type barbecue shrimp, not the real oily one, but it has those Latin flavors in there.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
Yeah, so that's just one of the neat dishes. We're doing these marinated Cornish game hens that are very much in a Yucatecan style. Really going to be a fun menu.
Something else that I'm really curious about that you all do such a stellar job with is that with restaurants in so many different locations, how do you all maintain that authentic taste replication with your menu items?
Yeah, well, you're familiar with those shock collars they put on puppy dogs? Every one of my cooks. No. What we do, we have a phenomenal team of managers and supervisors and our corporate staff and all that. And they recognize that we're more of a training company than we are a culinary company. So they work extremely hard building a great culture to get everybody to buy into what we're doing.
Well, I know that one of the great gold standards in the replicating the restaurant effort is certainly Ruth's Chris. And I always find it a little, I don't know, disturbing that the chefs at a Ruth's Chris are not even allowed to make their own cocktail sauce because that's actually all commissaried and shipped out all over the world.
Right.
So
that's surprising because that would, to me, that seems like, well, that seems like a very simple item.
Yeah, to me too. And if you give them a recipe and they follow it, they should do it.
I will tell you this. You can't just give somebody a recipe because if I were to give you a recipe and if I gave it to four different people, I'd have four totally different sauces. You've got to train. You've got to follow up. You've got to expect what you inspect, as Hans is old saying, and you've got to follow up with it. But certain things make sense, I think, to give it to them partially done. And for that, let's say, for example, an etouffee, a good Cajun-style etouffee sauce. What's the most difficult part of that? Well, it's cooking that roux right, getting it perfect, getting the vegetables and the spice level right and all that. Now, I would never, ever put any seafood in an item and then ship it across country and expect it to be great. I mean, it would be awful. But to do those base items there, to get all the hard stuff out of the way, I can see where that would work. Maybe not a cocktail sauce, but you know, maybe the base of a soup. Just no protein in it.
Yeah,
so certain things like that can help out. Certainly spice blends are great. We have partnered with Paul Prudhomme way back when. We use some of his spices that are right off, you know, out of his repertoire. But also he blends all my specialty spices, the things we use, the rubs for the chicken and for the meat rubs and all that, and the ribs and all that other stuff. And he does a great job with it. I even have him blend for us the flour that we use to bread our shrimp and our catfish and things like that. He actually gets it at a better price, and he can do a great job of making sure it's mixed perfectly.
Consistency.
It's all about that.
Consistency. Well, talking about taking the food on the road, shipping it, and moving food around, the taste buds are also really renowned for philanthropic efforts. So talk to me a little bit about Three Chefs, One Mission.
Well, you know, it kind of goes back to our first story we were talking about in Hawaii. That was a charity event. We were out there donating our time. And when we got together and we started opening our restaurants, we knew it was important to give back to the community. So we've always done that, whether it's participating in a school fair or some of the larger events, or probably one of the first big events I was involved in was the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. I was actually a board member for many, many years, and I still help them out with them. I'm an honorary board member. I've done it for so long. So it's a good group of folks, and it meant a lot to me personally. And we've continued to do that all throughout the city and in the other cities that we're in. Well, it was, let's see, 2 years ago, I guess, is when the tornadoes hit.
Yes.
When they struck first, it
Joplin.
Was Tuscaloosa and Joplin. And
yeah.
It was just unbelievable. And it really hit home. I mean, watching those pictures, I now knew what it was like for people to look at pictures and video of New Orleans when the storms hit us. So we said, you know what? We have to help these people out. We know what they're feeling, and we know what they need. And they didn't just need another Red Cross feed line, take your little styrofoam clamshell and go find someplace. We said, not only want to fill their bellies, we want to lift their spirits. So we took Amanda Shaw out there with us, and she played. And we actually set up kind of was like a little mini festival. It wasn't just one long line, wait your turn and all that. We set up food stations all over the place. And we enlisted some other buds. I had my buddy Duke LaCicero come out there with me, and Randy Stein, a whole bunch of other folks. So everybody just kind of pitched in. It was a wonderful event. And it was like a little mini festival.
It was really R&R instead of just straight on food relief.
It was great. We did the same thing in Joplin. Rolled it out again for Braithwaite after Hurricane Isaac. They were hit down there. And then most recently, I just got back from New York. We did some stuff for the Sandy victims. We're supposed to go back up for that. So, you know, it really is more than three chefs. It's kind of a little bit of Louisiana, actually a lot of Louisiana. And the other thing we do is we always bring great Louisiana seafood up there. So we're also helping promote one of our most valuable resources that we have.
That's really important for us all because just another tragedy of ours, the BP oil spill, unforgettable. Mm-hmm. So what are the biggest challenges that you face when you're rolling out a relief effort, a little mini R&R festival in a completely tornado-devastated landscape?
Unlike a hurricane, where you've got a widespread area that's wiped out, with a tornado, it tends to be a little bit more limited. I mean, it can be widespread, but it's more in a straight line. It was very strange. We got to Tuscaloosa on one side of the street. People at Starbucks getting their lattes, and on the other side, it looked like a bomb went off. But it was like, it was almost like a surgical strike. It was incredible just to see the difference. But what happens in a city like that, you just don't know where can you hold the event. Are there going to be rooms available for folks? Because you know, you've got all the relief workers are there. The last thing I want to do is be a burden on that community. I don't want the people who are working hard to work, well, where are we going to put the taste buds who want to throw this party? And they don't quite understand because you can't really describe it as a party. It's more of an uplifting of the spirits. So it's difficult from that standpoint, not knowing these cities. Yeah, it just kind of all comes together. I think when you're trying to do the right thing, things just work out.
Greg, looking back on all of these really terrific efforts that you all have done together, the Three Chefs, One Mission, what moments from those trips have really stayed with you?
I think it's the look on people's faces when they realize they didn't know how much they needed what we did. And it's after when they come up, they just give you a big hug and they just tell you thank you. If you get a chance, go on YouTube, put in there NBC Nightly News, Taste Buds, Joplin, any of those words and all, and you'll see a little piece that they did on us that aired on the Nightly News. Just look at the people. Don't pay attention to me talking on there. Look at the people and really see the joy in their face. And these folks that are just, you had lost everything. And I think right there, that's it. It's just, it really makes you realize that you're doing the right thing.
Nothing like a good Louisiana meal to just make anything get a little bit better.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I want to thank you so much. Come back soon.
I look forward to it.
Chef Greg Reggio of Semolina, Zia's, and the soon-to-be Cucina Mizzato, all projects of the amazing collaboration, The Taste Buds. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Next week, we learn about Louisiana Seafood Direct, a new way to purchase the freshest seafood right from the fishermen.
Let's say if the T-Turbo is going out Wednesday, he'll put a message on there. He'll go online, put this message, I'm leaving on Wednesday, I'll be back to the dock on Friday. And then when he's out there, he'll maybe post another message. He'll call into his wife, who'll go on the internet and say, Jimmy's coming in with 4,000 pounds of 2125 whites. So that's the model. Once they post that message, people start calling. And they make their deal with that fisherman so that when that boat gets to the dock, within just a few hours, everything has gone off of that boat.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org.
Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan and Company, Lightsegan and Westside Lightsegan Funeral Homes, LCI Workers' Comp, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Kitchen and Culture Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to producer and sound engineer Thomas Walsh. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.